Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
What was the original show was going to be about, which is kind of carrying on what you and Vince talked about yesterday with looking at the Notre Dame offense, because it's interesting. The Notre Dame offense is not getting the same preseason love that the defense is. Where what was fascinating about your guys' conversation yesterday is, you know, like all three position groups on Notre Dame's defense, the line, the linebackers, and the secondary, are ranked as one of the 10 best groups in the country by at least one, you know, magazine, obviously one of, and it's only two of them so far. And so it's like, you know, there's some talent there, but you know what, how good will it be? Will they reach that potential? Should they be there? Whatever. Offensively, there's only one group that's even in the conversation right now. And that's the offensive line. The offensive line was ranked number one by Lindy's. I forgot what Athlon had them. They had them in the top 10. Let me pull up the old Athlon here, Ryan. They had them in the top 10. I just don't think it was number one. They had the offensive line ranked eighth, which I think is fair based on.
You got the old Athlon. I got the old Lindy's.
I got my Lindy's right here. Right. So I got the same. I think I got the same Lindy's as you do. Is that Mayer on the front?
No, I got the so I'm in more in like Big Ten country. So they actually have Foskey on the front of this one.
Okay,
which is
pretty
dope.
I got this one. Yeah, I got the Michael Mayer one.
Here for the viewers out there, we got Isaiah Foskey on the front there. Yep.
There you go. And then Mayer's on this one as well. So he's kind of hidden behind CJ Stroud. And they make Blake Corum, who's like 4'7", look tall, bigger and taller than Michael Mayer, but whatever.
Hey man, he's 5'8", all right. He's 5'8". Give him 5'8".
It is what it is. I wonder if it's storming outside. Rita just crawled down below my feet, so I wonder if she's scared of something. So yeah, she's a little scaredy dog. Sorry about that. So they have them number seven quarterbacks, and this one is interesting because they actually rank it kind of by position. They go quarterbacks, running backs, receivers, offensive line, where normally it's kind of like pass catchers more so, where it's receivers and tight ends, and or they'll kind of count receivers as receivers and tight ends. Notre Dame is obviously not in those. And I honestly, Ryan, and this is kind of what we'll go through, is I don't know if I would necessarily disagree with that. So let's first talk about the Notre Dame offensive line, right? First or eighth? I would say if I had to pick one of the two, I would probably go, again, it depends on what your premise, like, are you going full projection, or are you also kind of taking into account somewhat of what it was last year? I think if you're going full projection, I can understand putting Notre Dame one. I wouldn't, just because there's a lot more I want to see. There's some lines, like Michigan has a lot coming back. It's kind of like, you know, they won the Joe Moore Award last year. They were good line, a little bit overhyped, but they won the Joe Moore Award, and they have four starters coming back.
Something like that, yeah.
And you know, Notre Dame's got a lot of turnover. I think the talent.
They also, Michigan also has that center transfer from Virginia that was an All-American last year, yeah.
Good player.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if I'd put them one right now unless I'm going full projection. Who is number one based on everybody reaches their full potential? Then I think we could have an argument that Notre Dame could be number one, but I'm just not there yet. I'd say I'd probably put them like right in the middle, maybe even closer to where Athlon has them at number eight, just because there are some questions that we need to have answered, right, Ryan? I mean, you got two true sophomores at tackle. You've got a center coming back from an injury who you may move to guard, missed the whole spring. You have a center stepping in, another player potentially stepping into the starting lineup at center who started six games last year and was not good in Zeke Correll. Now, we think he is going to be much better based on what he did in the spring and what he did as a center 2 years ago. And then you have Josh Lugg, who's been okay, been solid. So I just – I mean, if you're a top 10 group, you're a pretty good group, Ryan. A 10th out of 130-plus teams, I would probably have them closer, like 6 to 8 is the range I would have them. Yeah. Where would you have the Notre Dame offensive line? Again, this is coming into the season based on a combination of proven experience, depth, talent, and your faith that they're going to be prepared to play at a somewhat strong level. If Harry Hiestand wasn't coming back, they're not in my top 10.
Right.
But
right.
With Harry Hiestand coming back, that factors in. So I'd have him like 6 to 8. Ryan, where would you have the Notre Dame offensive line and why?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You know what's really interesting, Brian? When you look at these Lindy's rankings, I feel like some of the positions are ranked more based upon what is the definites coming back, right? Like the proven commodities, and then some of these are very projection based because you had Notre Dame at number one and Lindy's obviously for the offensive line. They had Ohio State at number two. I'm like,
right?
That's not based upon last year, obviously.
Oh, like, that's pure projection.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's pure projection. I think that. If we're talking about just projection and talent level, then I'm okay with Notre Dame being ranked number one because if it's just pure projection. But, like, let's be honest. They were not a better offensive line last year than Michigan, like you said. They were not a better offensive line than BYU, who BYU has several good starters coming back. Baylor has both offensive tackles coming back and a center that were very good from last year's unit. Oregon has a couple guys. Georgia has the center Van Praan and Broderick Jones coming back who were good players. So I would say I think that we're in a similar ballpark. I would say 7 to 9, 6 to 8, somewhere in that ballpark.
I would definitely have them ahead of Georgia and Cincinnati and Clemson. Clemson's offensive line being on there is like, wow.
That doesn't make any sense.
That's holy moly.
Yeah.
Like, they must really love Jordan McFadden because the rest of their offensive line is just, you know, not good. Unless they think that some of those freshmen are going to emerge this year.
I guess they're counting on a junior breakout from Walker Parks. I don't know.
And then Athlon had Texas A&M 5th and Wisconsin 7th. I think Wisconsin could have a good offensive line this year, but I thought A&M being 5th was a little bit of a, like, they lost their, but they weren't great on the offensive line last year and they lost their best player.
Yeah, they have a couple sophomores. They have Ruben Fothery at right tackle and Bryce Foster, who are both good players. But like you said, you just lost
a kids. That sounds like a recruiting thing, maybe a little bit. Then Ryan, if what you're saying,
I think so because they're not even in the top 10 for Lindy's from Texas A&M's perspective. And like you just said, they just lost the top 20 pick in Kenyon Green this past draft too. So and
didn't they lose their offensive line coach to USC?
I believe so. Yeah. It's definitely a new offensive line coach. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, the guy that built the line they had last year is now at USC. So That one was also a little bit of a head scratcher to me. I was like, that one didn't make a lot of sense, but you're always going to have that, right? And that's always going to be part of the conversation. So we're similar range. I think 6 to 9 is sort of the max of what we both had. I was 6 to 8. You threw 9 out there. So, I mean, I think that's kind of in that ballpark here. I'm trying to find out who their new offensive line. Steve Adazio is Texas A&M's new offensive line coach. So, I mean, he's a good offensive line coach. Not a good head coach. And I kind of wonder, like, is he going to be in a situation of like what the guy last year was, Doug Marrone, is like, been a head coach. Is he going to be happy just being an assistant coach again? I don't know. If he is, then Steve Adazio is a good football coach. I don't know if he's necessarily better than the guy that they have. He's a good football coach as an offensive line coach. Very good. Very good offensive line mentor for sure. So I guess the question now, Ryan, is where do you think this group can be? And what do they got to do to get there? I think for me, there's three questions. I think I believe, Ryan, that they can get to number one. I think that Notre Dame has a chance. I'm not betting on it. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I wouldn't also be shocked either if Notre Dame goes out there, assuming good health and has the best offensive line in the country.
I don't disagree at all. I mean, like I said, if you're talking just pure projection and talent level, I think that they are in the conversation right now. Like, I could see them getting there because – I mean, there's a lot dependent upon it, right? Like, we're talking about – I just mentioned there's two super sophomores on the Texas A&M offensive line. Notre Dame's in the same boat, right? Like, they need those sophomores to be dudes, and they need the rest of the line to kind of fill out. And you need to have Coach Eastand take, obviously, a next step with some of this talent. But I agree with you, Brian. I think – I mean, who are the more talented lines that are on this list other than them? Like, I mean – I guess you can make an argument that there's a couple of Georgia guys that are really talented, Ryan. Right. Ohio State, if Paris Johnson hits, like, maybe. Yeah. Okay, cool.
I think Ohio State's talent is a little overrated.
A little bit, yeah.
I don't think DeJuan Jones is the guy that people make him out to be. Matthew Jones is a nice player, but he's not a dude.
A little bit of a segue. Did you see the DeJuan Jones official measurements, by the way, on the thing? Man. That is a big boy.
Yes.
That's one of the biggest offensive tackles I've ever seen, man. For people that obviously nobody else has seen it, but just real quick, the right tackle for Ohio State, DeJuan Jones, verified 6'8.5", 370, 36 1/8 inch arms, 11 5/8 inch hands. Brian, he had a 89 inch wingspan. I've never heard of anything like that before. So, but the problem is with DeJuan Jones, I talked about this yesterday with someone. I was like, yeah, that's impressive, but he's not good. So that's tough. That's a little tough right there, you know?
I think Michigan should still be good again. I think that they're going to have a good offense this year, assuming they get the quarterback situation to make more plays. Ohio State to me has a top 10 line, Ryan. I just think it's a bottom of the top 10, not top of the top 10. I mean, there's some players. I mean, like I said, Paris Johnson has potential. He's transitioning from he was a right guard last year, correct, to left tackle.
Yep.
You know, Matthew Jones played a lot of football at Ohio State, started a bunch of games.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Whipler's a good football player. He's their Zeke Correll, right? But he's just had a chance to play more because that spot's been open and there wasn't a Jarrett Patterson there in front of him for the last few years. And of course, you know, there's Jarrett Patterson. So, you know, they'll have some players, they'll have some talent. It's just, I want to see the job Justin Fry can do. I'm more confident that by the end of the year, Ohio State will have a top 10 line now than I would have been if Coach Studd was still there. Cause I do like Justin Fry as a coach. I think he's a good football coach. I mean,
agreed.
That UCLA offensive line was very well coached and they were physical. He did a really nice job at BC. I would have taken him over Jeff Quinn when he interviewed for the Notre Dame job, but I don't know if the tools he's working with are quite to the level of the tools that Harry Hiestand is working with in regards to the talent around him. I'm just going to be honest with you.
Right.
And then you have Hiestand plus Chris Watt. Not enough people are talking about the fact that Chris Watt is also part of this conversation too.
I haven't heard anybody mention that, honestly. Yeah. I haven't heard it at all. Yeah.
It's mentioned here and in Notre Dame circles. Yes. But nationally, I don't see. I mean, their graduate assistant coach was a Division I offensive line coach a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's not a lot of people that can say that. And was the GA on the team that won was a finalist for the Joe Moore Award 2 years ago. So what has to happen, Ryan? You kind of got to it. Obviously, the tackles have got to be as good as we think, right? They've got to be as good as we think. I think that Jarrett Patterson has to be healthy. I think that's a big key. If he's not 100% the player he was last year, then that hurts the line a little bit. And then the third piece is it would be very easy to go with Zeke Correll, but I feel like Zeke Correll's at least going to be a solid player if he's healthy. I think right guard's the bigger thing for me, whether it be Josh Lugg stepping up and being the player that, you know, that, that Vince thinks he can be and that, that he's shown to be at different times. And I only say Vince because Vince, he was one of Vince's underrated guys or disrespected guys in our breakdown last week. And, you know, he's got to step up and be healthy. And if he does, I think that right side could be a really physical, good run-blocking line with Blake Fisher and Josh Lugg. If he doesn't, then somebody like Rocco Spindler or Billy Shrouth or Andrew Kristofic, you know, who's still going to be there trying to, you know, battle for a job. You know, I think the assumption is that he gets bumped out of the starting lineup. I don't know if that's a given. It could be maybe it's Josh Lugg that gets bumped out of the starting lineup. You know, there's all types of different battles that will happen. But I think that, to me, the right guard position is the bigger question for me as far as will they be number one or number four or number eight or number 10. I think that the tackles got to have to be what we think they're going to be. And I'm confident of those three things. I'm most confident in that.
Yeah.
Then Jarrett Patterson's got to be healthy. That's more of a question mark for me. And then the right guard position is probably my biggest concern. It's the thing I'm least confident in of those three aspects.
Do you think it's like, because obviously offensive line is such a cohesive unit, obviously, right? It's so dependent upon all five guys. Would you say it's kind of like a, you're only as good as your worst soldier type of situation, right? Like,
Because I think 2016 is a great example of that. I mean, you had two All-Americans on your left side and Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey, who not became All-Americans. They were a second and third team All-Americans that year in 2016. If you go back and watch Alex Barrs that year, Alex was pretty good at, he was real solid at right tackle in 2016, his first year as a full-time starter. Sam Mustipher had a solid year, you know, got thrown under the bus by Brian Kelly a couple times because that bum Sam Mustipher couldn't snap in a hurricane. I'm saying that sarcastically, and he had some first year in the lineup mistakes. You know, he had the snap against Stanford that went for a safety, but those things are going to happen in year one. But other than that, I mean, he also had some really good moments, but that right guard position was a train wreck for most of the year. And if you look at their production that year, once they put Mark Harrell in the lineup, and Mark Harrell was like a solid player, you know, more of a guy you want as a good versatile backup, can play some center, can play some guard, can play some tackle. If you remember Mark Harrell, you're a real solid quality football player, but a guy you'd rather at Notre Dame, you'd rather have as a
swing,
a depth piece, you know, right. a swing guy. That's a really good way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at once they kind of inserted him in the starting lineup, you started to see the offense start playing better and better and better. I mean, if you look at that year in 12 games, Notre Dame averaged over 5 yards a carry. See, 5 times. 4 of them were in the final 5 games of the year. 5 times. 4 of them were in the final 5 games of the year. Mm-hmm. They rushed for over 200 yards in 2 of the last 3 games and then ran for a 154 against USC. Would have ran for more, but they fell behind big in the second half. If you remember, first play of the game in that 16 game against USC, Josh Adams runs like 70 yards and gets tackled inside the 5. You know, so they averaged over 5. I'm sorry, those numbers were yards per rush, not total offense. Yards per rush. So they got a lot better down the stretch when they went to a different lineup, and it helped solidify things. And so I think there's a lot to what you just said, Ryan, is one ask, especially if it's up the middle.
Mm-hmm.
If it's up the middle, it's a problem. And what often gets lost in the 17 line is, yes, Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey get a lot of the love, but Sam Mustipher was solid that year. Alex Barrs was really good in 2017, really good at right guard in 2017. And then, you know, Kramer and Hainsey were solid. I mean, they weren't great. They had their moments where they were pretty good, but they were just steady. They didn't have a bunch of young guy first time in the lineup mistakes. They were just across the board, that was just a solid group. 2020 was the same way. There was nobody in 2020 that was as dominant as Quentin Nelson was in 2020 or 2017.
Right.
But they were just really good across the board. And when you saw Patterson come out and there was some more uncertainty inside with Lugg and Zeke Correll, that's when Notre Dame's offense kind of sputtered a little bit down the stretch, was with when they had that. But it's just one position, because remember, Kramer got hurt and then Patterson got hurt, and it just started to create some issues. Actually, Patterson got hurt, then Kramer got hurt. Excuse me. So, yes, continuity is a big piece of that. But I think that's also why I have a little bit more confidence in this line, because let's say Patterson does get hurt, and let's say Chris Stoffick's your number six. He can play tackle, he can play guard, he can play center. He's your swing.
Mm-hmm.
If Patterson goes down or Lug goes down, you got a kid that had started seven games last year and has played solid football, ready to just slide into the lineup, right?
As an insurance piece. Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Let's say one of the tackles goes down. You can either slide Josh Lug, a 12 game starter at right tackle last year, or you could put Tosh Baker in the lineup, who mm-hmm. I think is going to be better. He got some starts last year. He's going to get better under Coach Eastand. Or, you know, the point is, or you could move Kristoffic out there at right tackle, right? That there's options of guys who have played. And I think that helps protect you a little bit if you do have an injury. And I think that's part of, because you're going to have, guys are going to get banged up, right? Like 2015, Quentin Nelson missed two games,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, he got knocked out of one, missed another, and Alex Barr slid right in and they didn't miss a beat. You know, 2020, Jarrett Patterson got hurt. And, you know, I mean, guys are going to get hurt. Last year, Josh Lug gets hurt before the bowl game. I mean, they had some other things kind of go on. Blake Fisher gets hurt in the opener, right? And then Michael Carmody gets hurt. And so you just get in a situation where injuries are going to happen. Mm-hmm. Part of my confidence level for Notre Dame is I think they're going to be okay, because there's some good football players that have played that you can slide in. And I think that factors into my confidence level as well with the offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, there's – no matter how the offensive line ultimately shakes out, you now have depth. Like it was a shame that there were so many injuries last year and there was so much up and down. But the one positive is that you did get a lot of players playing time last year. And that's like, I'm right outside of Philadelphia, and that happened for the Eagles 2 years ago. Guys like Nate Herbig that used to play at Stanford played a ton. The offensive tackle out of Auburn, his name is escaping me, played a ton. And now they're just rotational players right in the back end. But if someone goes down, you have created depth for yourself through adversity. So it was unfortunate, but it also actually is long-term. It does help the offensive line a little bit as far as you feel more comfortable now what the depth looks like. But I agree, Brian. I think that Jarrett Patterson staying healthy and being the pillar of the offensive line is critical, because he is your one known commodity that's going to be a four-year starter. Like, you know what you should expect from Jarrett Patterson when things around him especially – are going to be a little better in theory. And then two, you need those sophomores to be dudes. Like, you need them to be the guys that you think they are. If they are, then I think Notre Dame could have the best offensive line in college football. Will they win the Joe Moore Award? We'll see, because that's more of a, there has to be storylines behind that a little bit more.
And
the team
effort, you know, you could have a great O-line, but if you're averaging 25 points a game, you're probably not winning the Joe Moore Award. You know, let's be honest about that. Otherwise, Iowa would probably have more wins. I mean, if we're being honest. And again, I don't think Michigan would have won it last year. I think that's where the storyline aspect that you just talked about. I'm sorry, Michigan had a really good offensive line last year. They were not the best offensive line in college football. I mean, just in my opinion, anyway.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
So, offensive line we talked about, right? And we will answer some questions at the end. So if you do have some questions, we will have a Q&A at the end. It won't be super long, because we went way long on our first couple topics, but we will definitely get to some Q&A. So if you do have some questions, fire them in there now, and we'll get to them at the end of the show. Ryan, let's talk about the backfield, okay? Sure. Obviously, Notre Dame is not in anyone's preseason top 10 in the backfield. We're gonna include backfield as quarterback and running back. We're going to talk about them both together, which is what Lindy's does. And I think for these – if you're going to do the list this way, then I don't think you should have running backs and quarterbacks separated. Like, if you're going to go secondary, linebackers, D-line, O-line, receivers are going to include tight ends, then you should also do it the way Lindy's does it. So we'll just look at it that way is what I think is the way to do it. And so that's what we're going to do today. Notre Dame has no business being ranked in the top 10 of the preseason. I mean, it just – there's so little proven production. And that's the thing, is like, there was a comment on our message board where somebody was a little fired up that the offensive line or the running backs weren't considered one of the 10 best groups. And if you look at the running back group that is coming back, I mean, Lynn Athlon did have that, and they did not have Notre Dame included in the top 10. And with all due respect, right now, Notre Dame shouldn't be in the top 10 at running back, because they're just, there's just not enough proven production. And I said this in my running back preview online today at irishbreakdown.com. They lost more yards last year, and just from the 2021 season, in Kyren Williams and the 10 yards from Sebo Flemister, than they have coming back in career rushing yards at running back. They're barely over 1,000. You know, most of those are from Chris Tyree, who missed most of the spring with concussion and battled turf toe last year. So it can't just be a talent standpoint. Otherwise, you're just going to put teams that have highly ranked recruits on it because they haven't proven anything, but you think they're talented. Quarterback, same thing. Tyler Buchner has no business being listed amongst the 10 best quarterbacks in the country coming into the 2022 season because he hasn't proven himself to be that just yet. So I think we can make quick work of that part of the conversation, right, Ryan? It's like,
yeah,
no, they should not be in the top 10. I think they're probably a backfield. I think they should be considered a top 20 group, in my opinion.
With the potential put in there.
Because potential is part – projection is part of this conversation. And so, whereas with the offensive line, we're projecting a line that a bunch of dudes have started games before. With running back, it's kind of like, well, I think Kyren Williams can be a really good player. I mean, Logan Diggs can be a really good player. I think Audric Estime can be a really good player. I think Jadarian Price can be a really good player. I think Chris Tyree, when he's healthy, is more like the guy we saw in 2020 and not the guy we saw last year. I think – there's a lot of projection, but really comes down to more so the quarterback position is the one where there's the most projection. But
yeah,
you need to be able to look at the talent and say, yeah, but there's a lot of talent there. And I think that's really where the focus is on. Can this become, and that's the question, Ryan, is can this group become, by the end of the year, one of the 10 best backfields in college football in a year that I think has a lot of really good backfields coming back, in my opinion?
There are, and this is why I don't love the inconsistency from Lindy's anyway. It's because the offensive line I felt was pure projection, and this one is much more Ohio State at one that has their starting quarterback, Heisman finalist, and you know, sophomore sensation running back in Trayvon Henderson. Like, that it's understandable.
If you did not have the number one.
Right.
You know what I'm going to say, Ryan.
You should cancel the magazine.
Find something else to do with your career.
Right,
exactly. You're not good at this.
Yep. I mean, so... but seriously, all these teams are like Alabama has Bryce Young and then a bevy of five-star running backs that are all and Jahmyr Gibbs transferring in, right? Then you have USC that has the Dye kid that transferred from Oregon, Caleb Williams. So you have teams that have known commodities.
I'd
right?
still like, say USC is a little bit of a projection with
a Caleb little bit.
Williams, though. But to your point, you got a 1,200-yard rusher and a quarterback that started for a top 15 team last year.
Correct. Exactly. So the whole top 10, I mean, the only team that has any projection really is like Michigan at 9. I mean, just because what's the quarterback didn't do great last year. The kid that was committed was to game manager at one point. Yeah. Blake Corum's a good player, but then Texas at 10. I mean,
Blake Corum was their number two back last year. He was a change of pace guy. Not, right. You know, Hassan Haskins was their.
He was their dude. Yeah.
Workhorse
yeah.
last year.
Agree. And then Texas, obviously, with Bijan is carrying that because we haven't seen what Quinn Ewers really is yet. We'll see about that one.
But. Well, see, here's the thing, Ryan. I feel like they were even inconsistent within this position group. Because if you're going to produce so much projection, which I kind of feel like they're doing, then Texas should be higher because, you know, Quinn Ewers is a five-star. I wouldn't do it. I'm just saying, like, because Bijan Robinson, in my opinion, is the best running back in college football.
Oh, he's a dude. He might end up being the best running back I've scouted. I've already taken some like preseason looks at him. The kid is special, man. Yeah, he's really special.
He's really good.
Yeah.
Now the question at the other side is what are they going to do at running back? And that's kind of my thing with Tennessee, Ryan, with where they are. I get it. Cause Hendon Hooker was really good last year.
Sure.
They have good backs, but I don't know if I would look at their backfield and say that I'm definitely taking them over, for example, like a BYU or a Utah. Mm-hmm. You know, because Utah's got Cameron Rising coming back, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, I believe Tavion Thomas is coming back, correct?
Yeah.
He had over 1,100 yards last year, 21 touchdowns.
6'2", 240 this spring. He's a load.
I mean, he's transferring in from Cincinnati. He's a beast.
Yep.
Kid's a good football player. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. He missed a game against Arizona. He had one carry for 1 yard against Washington State, one carry for 0 yards against San Diego State, and still rushed for 1,000 yards last year.
Yep.
You have TJ Pledger, I also believe, is coming back this year, correct?
Nah, he was in the draft.
In the draft? Okay, that was dumb. You have Micah Bernard coming back, and fortunately for him, he won't have to be covering people like he did in the Ohio State game.
Because he's a decent running back, man. He's not bad. He's a
good running back, yeah. So you look at it, you say, boy, you know, that's a pretty good backfield. With all due respect to Tennessee, I'd probably have them higher, even mm-hmm. though I definitely think Hendon Hooker is a better quarterback than Cameron Rising. Cameron Rising was a solid, steady manager type of player last year who can do – he doesn't get enough credit for what he does with his legs, in my opinion.
He averaged like 6 yards a carry last year or something like that. 6.7. It was crazy number.
499 yards. I mean, because you got to count. Sacks count as that. I mean, sacks exactly. are part of your rushing yards. And I'm looking at it last year. Utah gave up. I mean, only gave up 13 sacks for 85 yards. So I guess he didn't get sacked a ton.
Yeah.
But still, 499. And they don't do a lot of like designed runs for him. I mean, he's a good scrambler, but they'll run a read zone and he'll pull that sucker and take off with it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I like that. I don't think that backfield's getting enough do as well. I thought BC at number 8 was an interesting one.
I was about to ask you about you because obviously they have the Garwo kid right back at running back, who's mm-hmm. actually a good player, 1,000 yard mm-hmm. player, very underrated, doesn't get much talking point. And then they got Dracovic coming back, obviously. Right. So it's interesting to say the least. I don't
it requires some projection because how's Phil going to come back? And the only reason it requires projection is because of the injury.
Exactly.
And I always get nervous when a quarterback injures his throwing hand or his throwing wrist. You don't know how the bones are going to heal. You don't, and especially since they kind of brought him back before he's fully healed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did it grow back improperly and you don't have the same snap or the, you know, whatever. He looked fine in the spring game. But yeah, that's one that's got a little bit of projection to it to me.
Well, it also has projection because they're replacing 4 or 5 starters on the offensive line too. Right. So how effective is the run game? Is it going to be as effective as it was last year?
Right.
So.
It's a fair question.
Yeah.
Very fair question. Tennessee was an interesting one, but I'm fine with that. I mean, Will Levis was I don't like Will Levis, the projection he's getting for the NFL. I think that's absurd. Will Levis is a good college football player in that system.
Yeah.
The bigger talented. Question for Kentucky for me is what's their offense going to look like now that they're offensive coordinators in the NFL? That's a bigger question for me.
Mm-hmm.
What has Notre Dame got to do? Right? Well, what is the max for what Notre Dame can be this year from a backfield standpoint? And what do they have to do to get there, in your opinion?
It's a great question. I mean, I look at this, Brian, and I'm just like, okay, Ohio State, Alabama, that's going to be tough to get over, right? But after that, I mean, you could convince me that Notre Dame gets into the top 3 to 5. I mean, you could if Tyler Buchner is what we think he can be, because if he is what we think he could be and he gives us the dual threat element of the game, then that makes all your running backs better. And I think that that's the one thing about this is all the units that are listed as far as running backs are concerned, most of them just have one dude, right? Like we talked about Tavion Thomas from Utah that was sitting at number 7. But if Tavion Thomas goes down, they don't really have depth. Notre Dame has a lot of depth. It might be unproven.
Right.
But I really think that, I mean, Tyler Buchner, I mean, the quarterback's always the key, right? But for me, Tyler Buchner's ability as a dual threat quarterback to unlock every aspect of this offense, I think is critical, because I think if you are mixing and matching Chris Tyree and hopefully Logan Diggs and Audric Estime and Jadarian Price, I think that that's going to be one of the deeper running back units in all of college football. Right. So it's very dependent upon, for me, how good is Tyler Buchner in year one as a starter?
Yeah, that's the key. Because, look, there's not going to be a Trayvon Henderson in this group. There's not. As much as I like the running backs, there's not that guy on the roster. There's no Bijan Robinson on the roster. What they do have, however, is some Travis Dye types, right, or better. I mean, Travis Dye was a system guy. He was a product of a system. And, you know, Chris Rodriguez, Patrick Garwo, you know, guys like that. Like, okay, they have some guys like that, you know, good football players. They have a lot of those. What they don't have is that dude at running back. So for them to be a group that's considered a top 5 backfield, they're going to need the quarterback to be that dude. And he can be, but he's got a lot to prove. So then it comes down to, okay, is the combination better? So like Patrick Garwo is a good football player. Notre Dame's got 3 kids at least that have more just God-given talent than him. But what they don't have is his proven production. You know what he's going to give you. Mm-hmm. You know he's going to answer the bell week after week after week. You don't know if this group is what they're going to give you. What you also don't know, Ryan, is this group going to answer the bell week after week after week just from being there? Chris Tyree was battled turf toe last year. He missed most of the spring with concussions. Logan Diggs tore his labrum in the spring. Jadarian Price was banged up most of his junior year. Never really missed games, but, you know, was a little banged up. He's a freshman. He's not going to be a 180 carry guy. He doesn't have the physique that Trayvon Henderson had last year. I mean, Trayvon Henderson, like, physically could step in as a freshman. Like, that dude can be your dude. And even they, even then, Ohio State didn't necessarily put that bell cow role on him.
Yeah.
Last year, they played other guys to take
John Williams and Master Teague.
Exactly. Yep. So even then, even though he had a better physique for that, he didn't have to be that dude where he's getting 20 touches a game. So Jadarian's not that guy. So if you lose guys, you don't want to thrust him where he has to play 50 plus snaps a game and get 20 plus touches a game. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Jabron Payne, talented as he is, has barely played really any football the last 2 years because of injuries. So I think those are the question marks at running back. It's like, are they going to be able to answer the bell every week? Like, Trayvon Henderson is going to answer the bell. Trayvon Henderson is going to answer the bell every week, right? Bijan's going to answer the bell every week. At least that's what they've proven so far.
Zach Charbonnet, like those proven
commodities. He's going to answer Travis Dye is going to step up and answer the bell every week, right? That's what this group has to prove. And then quarterback, because if they're healthy at running back this year, Ryan, the production is going to be there because of what we just talked about with the offensive line. I mean, if Chris Tyree is healthy and he's behind this line, he's going to average 7 yards a carry. You know, he'll get 8 to 10 carries a game and average 6.5 to 7 yards a carry and be a home run. I mean, he hit 3 50-plus-yard touchdowns last year, and he wasn't even healthy for much of the year, you know, and they were clutch touchdowns too, because he had the 96-yard kick return, the 55-yard reception in the fourth quarter against Toledo, and then, of course, the 53-yard reception against Oklahoma State. So, you know, he's a home run hitter. Jadarian Price can be a home run hitter. You've got a guy like Audric who can be more of a pure between-the-tackles guy. Logan Diggs, if he can be a more consistent player, and just sometimes it's okay to just get 3 yards. You know what I mean? You don't have to bounce everything. I think the talent is there. It's just, can they put it all together? At the end of the day, Notre Dame being a top 5 to 10 group is going to come down to the quarterback. And can Tyler Buchner produce at a level that puts him in this conversation? But also, more importantly, can he win? I think that's the big part about it. Because, like, say what you want about C.J. Stroud, and he maybe one-dimensional, didn't run last year. Kid went 11-2 and put up tons of yards. You know, Bryce Young, his first-year starter, took Alabama to the national championship game and would have a ring right now as a national champion if he didn't lose his two best receivers in their last couple games of the year, including right in the middle of that title game. You know, Caleb Williams is a little bit of a different deal for me, but he had some some moments last year where he looked like a five-star quarterback.
For sure.
I mean, if they don't bring him off the bench against Texas, they lose that game. I mean, it's no doubt about it. So I think when you look at it, that's going to be the key. Tyler Buchner is going to have to be that guy that produces and wins a lot of football games. And if he does that, then I think they have a shot to be in this group. Now, I don't know if I could – I don't know if I would say that I think they get to 3, because I think Quinn Ewers is going to play at least good enough. I'm not a big Quinn Ewers fan. You know that.
Yeah.
But I think he's got a great offensive mind coaching him. Mm-hmm. If he's just not an idiot – and that's not a guarantee with Quinn Ewers. If he's just not that, then he's at least going to be good, right?
Sure.
But Bijan is so good,
so good,
that I think that adds to it. Now, I also think Texas is going to have better depth this year at running back too, Ryan.
Roshan Johnson's a good player, and they also have the is it Keelan Robinson was the Alabama transfer, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's the other thing is. They don't have to rely on him, and I believe they signed what's his first name? His last name's Blue. Jadon Blue, something. Believe Jadon maybe. Blue. Yeah, something like that. But like he sat out last year because basically he didn't want to get hurt before he could get his NIL deals in college.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really good player. You know, and he's a kid that can help you as a freshman as well. So they're gonna that's the other thing about Texas. I would argue that Notre Dame could end up having the deepest running back room in college football, but right now I'd probably go with Texas or Alabama.
Sure.
Because I don't think Alabama has that dude. I know Trey Sanders was a five-star, but he's never
– Jahmyr Gibbs is probably going to be their guy.
But I don't view him as that dude. I think Jahmyr's like a – I mean, he's never been that at Georgia Tech.
No.
You know, there's a lot of his assumptions about what he'll do.
Right.
And a lot of assumptions, well, he would have been better behind this, that, and the other. That may all be true. I like Jahmyr Gibbs. But let's also be honest that, you know, the kid rushed for 746 yards last year. He rushed for 492 the year before. He's averaging less than 5 yards a carry in his career. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's still got a lot to prove. Now, he's a great all-around player.
Talent.
But is he like that take the game over runner? That I don't know. Because, like, Najee could do that if you needed him to, right? Like, Brian Robinson did that last year in the semifinal. Can you know, so I think there's someone's going to emerge at Bama. I just don't know who that's going to be.
Right.
You know, and will it be anyone that's on the level of Bijan? No. Will they have anyone that steps up and is on the level of Travion Henderson? No, they won't. But they do have depth. Mm-hmm. But I also think that's why Bama's group may end up not having a great one player. But I think that's the group, to me, that compares most favorably to Notre Dame, is because Bama may not have that dude at number one. You know, Trey Sanders may be your between the tackles guy. Jameer's your all do it all everything. You know, you've got Jason McClellan coming back, I believe, on that team. Yep. He's a good player. It's more of like a you don't have that guy, but man, you got four dudes that can play and they have different roles. And that's kind of how I see Notre Dame. There may not be a 1,000-yard rusher this year. There may not be.
Yeah.
But you're just gonna have a bunch of dudes that just have their moments throughout the year and have their roles. And as a whole, the production is there when you include the quarterback.
Yeah, well, I think I said in the one preview show we had where I could see Notre Dame having three to four guys, that are 500-plus yard rushers this year, right? Like, I think
did you include the quarterback or you?
I include the quarterback in that. Yep, quarterback is included in that. Let me ask you this, Brian. I think this is a good conversation piece because obviously the consistency of a run game is obviously dependent on how good an offensive line is. If I told you right now that Lindy's is absolutely correct, Notre Dame has a number one offensive line in the nation next year. Would you go any higher than five if I guaranteed that to you?
No.
No? Still no?
No. Okay. Because I need to see what happens outside.
Fair.
I mean, because we saw that in 2020. I wouldn't have said Notre Dame had one of the five best backfields in 2020, and I think they probably had the best offensive line in college football that year until the injuries late in the year. So, you see, Rita made her appearance. She was getting a little hot under the desk because she went and laid down on her bed. But, no, I would say no. I wouldn't guarantee that they'd be top five. Just because there's some really good top fives. If the next part of the conversation checks out to just be in the top, if the receiving core is in the top 15 to 20, then my answer is yes. If you were to add that caveat, the receiving core, like if we would have done this group last, you say the receiving core will finish around 12 to 15 this year. O-line will be number one. Will the backfield be ranked in the top five? I say yes, absolutely.
Got it.
Because you'll have then enough pressure on the you'll take enough pressure off on the perimeter that it then opens up some room to run with your backs. Yes, then I would put them in there.
That's fair. That's very.
You'd also have to promise me one more thing. Does Tyler Buckner play at least 11 games? That would be the other piece of it. Because as much as I like Drew Pine, you can win a lot of games with Drew Pine, right? You know my stance on Drew Pine, but you're not going to say they have one of the five best backfields. It'd be then they'd basically be Michigan last year if Drew Pine's a quarterback. Now, look, again, they made the playoff because of that game manager, right? That point guard. Michigan had a point guard quarterback last year in Cade McNamara, like a John Stockton type of point guard.
Yeah.
But he wasn't winning you games. He didn't need to until you got to the postseason and you played Georgia, and then you needed a guy that could run around and do some stuff because they were getting their butt kicked up front. They didn't have that, and he couldn't do anything. And that's what's killed Notre Dame so many times is once you get into a situation where your line can't dominate, because the other team's pretty good too. Now, even if they play well, they're not dominating. Then you're going to be in trouble if you don't have a playmaker quarterback. And that Drew Pine would be Michigan this year and last year with Cade McNamara quarterback, which again won a bunch of games. But can you beat the best of the best with that? That's a bigger question mark for me.
You know, the one team I'm surprised isn't in the top 10. Not saying that I would have them in the top 10, but I'm kind of surprised that from a media perspective that they didn't try to put Georgia in here somewhere with. Stetson Bennett coming back, and they have like Kenny McIntosh at running back, who was a big time recruit. Kendall Milton, like those types of guys. I know. Again, we talked about this list was more known commodity versus projection, but I'm surprised that they didn't try to get Georgia in there somewhere.
You know who else I'm surprised isn't in there that I think we should have a more of a conversation about, and I think it's more of the Power Five bias. Why isn't Coastal Carolina in the top 10?
Grayson McCall and all those boys.
Yeah. I mean, they got two running backs combined for over 1,000 yards last year and had success against some of the better opponents. So, I mean, again, if this is just Power Five, then sure. But that's a pretty good backfield. There's a lot of Power Five teams that would love to have Coastal Carolina's backfield. Would you agree with that? I mean, there's several teams on Notre Dame's schedule that would like to have that backfield, if we're being honest about it. So that's one that I thought was I was a little surprised – that that group wasn't on there. And if Bo Nix is back, I'm just saying this to tick Ryan off. If Bo Nix was back, Auburn is definitely in the top 10 in the backfield.
Oh, well, too bad he's at Oregon now. So
I like Bo a lot more than you do, but Tank Bigsby's an interesting player. That would be more of where it was coming from.
So. Tank's a very talented player.
Yep. Surprised, and then another sleeper team to look out for this year is possibly having a group. And you, I think you know where, once I say it, you're going to be like, yep, I knew you were going to go there. NC State.
That's
another team.
Well, they lost both their running backs, though, is the only thing with that. But Leary's going to have
good young runners, though. They got some good young runners that I like coming back, and then I really like Devin Leary. That's what I said, sleeper team. Like, that's a team that I could see jumping into that when the season's over with. So that's the backfield. Ryan, let's talk about pass catchers. This is receivers and tight ends. And I think what's funny is you have to include the tight ends here because where else will they be? You're not putting them in at the offensive line, and there's no category for tight ends. So I'm assuming that they're with the receivers. I was a little surprised that Alabama was ranked number one by Lindy's.
Over Ohio State, yeah, same.
Not only that, but over Ohio State, over USC. I mean, there's a couple groups. Are you just basically saying that you're just assuming that, you know, Burton's going to be a dude? And
yeah,
you
know, Jermaine Burton and the other transfer they had from
Louisville.
From Louisville, Harold.
Harold,
they have to be dudes. And I guess the separation is I know they weren't dudes, but you need them to be dudes, I guess, for its projection, because Ohio State's obviously gonna be better at wide receiver. I guess the separator is Cameron Latu versus whoever's the tight end from Ohio State, I guess, is the separator. Sure. I mean, and Latu's good.
Tight end, because I know they lost I know they lost Ruckert.
Isn't it Stover? Isn't it Keith Stover?
Is it gonna be Stover?
I think he's one of them. Sure.
I know we have an Ohio State fan.
G. Scott's a tight end, I think, in that room.
Archer 452 is an Ohio State fan in our chat. So maybe he can let us know who's expected. He said Cade Stover. Who Notre Dame recruited as a edge player, is a really athletic kid. But
so did they. He wasn't originally a defensive end.
Throw to the tight ends a ton. Ever. Where I think the tight end is more integral. Alabama needs a tight end that's productive because of the way they run their offense. Ohio State doesn't need a tight end that catches. They're like Oklahoma to me. You know, I think they don't need a tight end to step up and be a good player. They can make do without it. I think the other thing about Ohio State this year is they're going to be bigger at receiver than they were last year, which means they needed Ruckert to kind of provide that big bodied presence in the pass game last year.
Red zone.
There you go.
Yeah. Yep.
And so I don't think that's as much of a need now as it was last year, because they've got Marvin Harrison, who's 6'4", because Emeka is going to be in the rotation most likely this year. If Julian Fleming is able to get in the rotation, he's not tall, but he's a thick, strong kid. I think when you look at it, I don't think they need that tight end as much. And, you know, you just look at what those receivers did. We saw a glimpse of what this receiving core is going to look like against Utah. Mm-hmm. Now, the caveat is they were beaten, converted running back, because of the injuries, but still there were some good players at Utah, and they just destroyed Utah secondary. And it was this group. I mean, everybody that was dominating that game, I believe, is coming back. Correct, Ryan?
Yeah.
Because Olave and Garrett Wilson, neither one of them played in that game. So mm-hmm. I'm just looking at what this group has proven. There's nobody in Alabama's depth chart that can sniff Jackson Smith and Jigba right now.
Who was
as a player?
Who is their leading receiver coming back that was on the team last year? Is it Ja'Cory Brooks?
I believe so, because you said it was on the team last year. And Harold had like 400 some yards last year. It wasn't even like he was dominant.
Yeah.
Jermaine Burton had 26 catches for 497 yards last year.
Yeah,
like now you could say, well, that offense is different. I mean, that's fine.
Yeah, Burton was misused. There's no doubt. But I mean, there's not a resume on him.
Exactly. Right. Whereas I can point to Jackson Smith and Jigba and say he's in the conversation for the best receiver in all of college football.
Sure.
Much less better than anybody that Alabama has. I'm trying to look up Alabama's stats from last year. Now, Ryan, it would be. Yep. I mean, Cameron Latu is your overall leading receiver last year. That was 26 catches for 410 yards,
which is pretty good for a tight end.
After that, it's Trayshawn Holden, 21 catches for 239 yards. Ja'Cory Brooks, 15 for 192. Mm. JoJo Early, 12 for 148. Javon Baker left, right?
Yeah, Javon Baker and the other freshman.
Yeah, Agaye Hall. Yeah, I mean, so, and I'm, you look at Ohio State and they've got. Jackson Smith and Jigba has more production coming back than their entire receiving core combined. Mm-hmm. Maybe double. I mean, even definitely not double if you include the transfers. But even if you include the transfers, he had more yards last year, I believe, than their entire receiving core. So putting Bama number one didn't make a lot of sense to me. Because Bama's wasn't better than their receiving core last year. Mm-hmm. When they had and yes, they both lost two guys, but the difference is Alabama lost all their starters. Ohio State lost two, and the guy they have coming back had more production than those other studs. Now, part of it's because those teams, you know, he was able to get a lot of single matchups, but I can't buy Bama being number one. But you look at the group, I have no beef with Notre Dame not being in the top 10 right now, even with Michael Mayer. And I think you could maybe make a case like some of these groups at the bottom, like Houston, you know, Wake Forest has some good players coming back. Here's the thing I'll say, though, Ryan. Mm-hmm. If you're going to put Michigan sixth, then Notre Dame should be in the top 10. That's my thing.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, because, I mean, Michigan has Eric All coming back, right?
They have a tight lot ends. Of bodies.
Yeah, they have a lot of guys. They have a lot of names. They have like Cornelius Johnson and Andrell Anthony. Like
Roman Wilson, Mike Sainstrill.
Ronnie
Bell comes back from injury.
Yep.
Andrell Anthony did okay down the stretch. But it's like, I mean, Lorenzo Styles basically has similar to production in all their receivers other than the Cornelius Johnson last year. Mm-hmm. And with all due respect to Eric All, and I did not mean that to sound like it did, none of those guys are in the same universe as Michael Mayer as a player.
If we're being honest, and this is not a biased thing at all, Michael Mayer combined just with Lorenzo Styles, what he did as a freshman should be over Houston. I know they had Nathaniel Dell, who was a good football player, but like, come on, man. Like, let's be honest here. Wake Forest had another one that's really one good wide receiver, A.T. Perry. He's a really good player. There's no doubt. But, I mean, Michael Mayer was the best tight end.
Ja'Cari Robinson, is he coming back?
He's gone. NFL.
So that would be my question. That would be Taylor Moren's a good player. But, again, it's a lot of young guy projection. And let's be honest. If Lorenzo Styles played at Wake Forest last year, not at Notre Dame, he would have had the production that those other guys had coming back.
Yep.
And so that's kind of my point with this is if you're going to put Michigan, like just in theory, without looking at who's in there, in theory, I'm okay with Notre Dame not being in the top 10. Mm-hmm. Where I have an issue is when you start looking at actually who they have in the top 10. And then it's like, okay, I don't understand this one.
That pops out to me is I think Maryland should be over Michigan. They have the Demas kid and the Rakeem Jarrett kid both coming back from Maryland. I think they should be over Michigan.
I didn't realize that Jacob Copeland transferred in there either.
Yes. Who's a talented player that was hindered by a Florida offense over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I definitely don't have them. And then Georgia coming back, I thought that's all based on their tight ends. I mean, it has to be because their receiving core situation is not exactly,
in my opinion,
super sexy at this
They have Kyrus Johnson and their, Kyrus Jackson. And
who wasn't healthy last year.
Who wasn't healthy. I think Eric Gilbert's going to play wide receiver for him. Like, he's not going to play tight end, I don't think. Yeah.
Right. I mean, Ladd McConkey was their number two pass catcher last year behind
Burton. Who's solid. Right.
I mean, if you're trying to build your top five pass catcher resume around him, I'm not sure. And the other one is I thought Virginia being in the top five was a stretch as well.
I don't know, man. They got some dudes.
But I'm not putting them in the top five. I'm not fair. I think that's more of a byproduct of who, because here's the thing. Look at what happened when they played Notre Dame without the quarterback.
Sure.
They did nothing. Nothing. Mm-hmm. If you've got dudes at receiver, a decent quarterback should at least be able to get you more than 3 points against a good defense, right?
Sure.
And it's not like Notre Dame had their 2018 defense last year. They did nothing when you took him out of that game. And they played a team with a real defense. That's the other thing is like, yeah, you know, you finally played a team with a real defense and look what happened, right? And that was it. Miami is another one too that I thought like they kind of got exposed a little bit as being system guys because Miami had some athletes and they kind of, you know, they ended up winning the game. Miami choked it away, but I thought it was more system driven. You know, again, good college football players.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the name of the kid that I really like? You know, I'm talking about the outside kid,
Dontavian Wicks.
Yes. Yeah. I like him a lot.
He's a good player.
Ketuan Thompson's a nice player, but again, last year he had matchups against Notre Dame that you're thinking a kid with his ability should be able to take advantage of.
You know? One thing that buoys them a little bit is they do have Lavelle Davis coming back from injury. He's like the 6'7 skyscraper that averaged like 25 a catch as a freshman or something.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I think it, you know, again, Jelani Woods was a nice player for them. You know, Billy Kemp's not coming back for them, is he?
Billy Kemp is coming back.
Is he like their version of Hunter Renfro?
Dude, he's got to be a 6-year senior, right?
Yeah, he's freaking old. He's been around for a minute.
He sure has.
He's been around for a while. So, yeah, goodness gracious. So, again, good players, but I'm just like, am I putting them ahead of Maryland? I mean, just the talent in the room? Like, whose roster would you rather have? I think it's debatable. And that's the whole point is I don't know if I would love them. Now, here's the bigger question, Ryan.
Yep.
Where can Notre Dame get to that? And then what needs to happen for them to get there?
With tight end in the conversation, obviously, at least in the Lindy side of things, right? Like, I'd say they can get to 5. Like, I'm just – they can get to 4 or 5. I think. I mean, one thing
– looking at this group.
Yes. Right? Yes. Like, I mean, Alabama, Ohio State, USC after that, I think is going to be a really dynamic team. Yep. After that, though, I can make an argument that at their peak, 4 or 5 is very attainable, I think.
I think USC should be ahead of Alabama right now, if we're being honest.
Sure.
And they got the Biletnikoff winner coming. But now, I mean, there's the cohesiveness. Mario Williams is coming back. He's better than anybody Alabama has coming back, right? I mean, they don't have a ton of depth, but that duo right there, to me, is better than anything Alabama has. I mean, to me, I would have it Ohio State 1, USC 2.
That's fair.
If we're just talking pass catchers.
They have the Bryant kid on the team still. Right. Gary Bryant?
Right. Yeah, he's a solid player. And now he's in a role where he's their 3 or 4, which then is more conducive to what type of player he is. He take some of that pressure off. So, yes, I mean, just looking at this group based on where they are, I mean, there's no reason I don't think they could get to 4. A lot has to go right.
Right.
But when you have the best tight end in college football, if you know that's what we believe at Irish Breakdown, it's certainly possible. I mean, if Georgia's going to get the 5 with just tight ends, I mean, Notre Dame should be able to be in that kind of conversation. And I would argue that Notre Dame's returning receiver situation is better than Georgia's returning receiver situation, in my opinion, because especially with Kyrus Jackson's injury history. I mean, he's got a lot of production, but I'm not trading him for Lorenzo Styles. You know, so now Notre Dame's got a lot to prove, right? That's the big thing here. It's a lot like the running back position. Right now with Notre Dame, this argument outside of Mayer, it's all projection, right? With the exception of Mayer and Avery Davis. And that's where I think Notre Dame's receiving corps is not getting enough respect. They're not getting – Avery Davis is not getting enough respect for what he's done the last 2 years and the kind of player he has been. And not just numbers-wise, but look at the moments in which Avery has had his best games. Right, he's made his biggest plays. It's been clutch moments. I mean, making a huge play at the end of the Clemson game to send that game, 2 huge plays against Clemson on that final drive to tie the game up. Yeah, I think they have a shot to get there. There's a long road between here and there. Long road. Braden Lindsay's got to stay healthy. That's number one. Somebody's got to emerge in the boundary. And it can't be Lorenzo full-time. Somebody's got to step up and be able to play there, whether it's Colsey, Jaden Thomas, Tobias Merriweather. The problem with Notre Dame is the depth is such a big question mark right now that it's like a couple injuries and it's a problem. And then also a tight end, somebody's got to emerge as the number two tight end. So that's what I'm saying. Like right now, I'm totally fine with Notre Dame not being a top 10 group. I'd say probably what around like 15 to 18 is right now probably where you'd have them maybe.
Maybe even a little higher. I might say 12 to 15 maybe, somewhere in that ballpark. Yeah.
Now, and I'm looking at this list. They had to – hold on a second. Let me see here. All right. So USC third, there's no mention of Jordan Addison. In this, so I got to think this is written before. It was probably
printed. Yeah, right.
I got to think this is written before that. And then they had Pitt ranked number six in Athlon. Again, that has to be with Jordan Addison. So that's another thing to factor into with these groups. Athlon's was even worse. They had Georgia number two.
Oh,
that's absurd.
that is you're hoping that Eric Gilbert is a dude conversation right there.
Right. Like, when was the last time a team that didn't have any legit – number one or two receivers, but had two great tight ends was that kind of team.
Come on. Right. I think for Notre Dame to get there though, Brian, I do think that they have an opportunity to get the four or five just based upon this list. Michael Mayer's a known thing, right? Like he's going to be a dude. There's no doubt about that. Barring an injury or some unforeseen thing like that. But
I think you have two known commodities if he's healthy. Right. You know what Michael Mayer is. He's a dude. But you also know what Avery Davis is, which is a really good, steady slot player. That's clutch. Won't blow you away with big-time production, but he's a good football player. Now, because I think you and I are going to be on the same page with what's next. So please continue with what else needs to happen.
You need a dude at receiver. So in my opinion, that should be Lorenzo Styles. You need him to be the guy, right? Like he needs to be your go-to wide receiver. And then you need Avery Davis and the rest of the receiving core to be good, solid contributors to your passing game. So I think you have a dude at tight end. You need one absolute dude at wide receiver, and you need a bunch of consistent good at the rest of the other spots. That's what I see, as you need it.
Agree. I think Lorenzo has to step up, because I think Braden Lindsay is key to this thing too. I think Braden Lindsay might be even more important than Lorenzo, and I'm going to make this argument why. If Lorenzo steps up and is a dude this year, I'm talking like 50 to 60 catches, 800 to 900 yards. Like, cause again, he's sharing running game, you know, dude, meaning he's a matchup problem. Not dude is in like 90 catches for 1400 yards. I'm talking about where you just you've got to have a game plan for him. 50 to 60 catches minimum, 800 to 900 yards minimum. 7-8 touchdowns, like great number two compliment to Michael Mayer. He's that dude. That's great. But I would say you could say if Lorenzo's just good and Avery's just good and Deion Colsey and Jane Thomas come and Device Merriweather as a trio are just good, that's a really good receiving core, Ryan. Like that's a top 10 group. But I would always go back to what could really launch into that upper stratosphere is if Braden Lindsay can be healthy and get back to the guy he was in 2019. If you can give this offense a guy that only needs 30 to 40 touches the whole year, and I'm talking total touches, when I say 40 to 50 total touches, that means reverses, jet sweeps, you know, all that stuff, which is what we saw from him in 2019. He only had 20 touches in 2019. Let's just say he doubles that because he plays the whole year, okay? He has 35 to 40 touches. That's it. You're talking about a guy that's going to have 800 to 1,000 yards of production on 40 touches with the kind of player that he can be, if he can be that guy. That's the key. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't have that dude, but I would argue if Lorenzo's just solid and Avery's solid and that other group is solid and Mayer's a stud and you have this home run hitter over here, that's going to make Styles better. It's going to make Avery better. It's because you can't – if you've got to worry about every time Braden Lindsay's on the field for him running by you, because, again, he's not going to be an 80-catch guy. That's not his game, right? He's not Will Fuller. They have different games. But if Braden can be a 40-touch guy that's averaging 20-plus a touch with Chris Tyree and Jadarian Price and Audric Estime and hopefully at some point a healthy Logan Diggs – with the type of runner that Tyler Buchner is, that is that final piece that could make this Notre Dame offense special. And I think that's the one thing, even with Lorenzo, I don't know if I view Lorenzo as that type of player. I think Lorenzo can be a big play guy, but I don't know if he's that guy that you're always worried about him running by you. if that makes sense. Like Lorenzo to me, and please understand where I'm going with this. If we're talking about types of players, you know, there's Will Fuller and then there's Devontae Smith, right? Stylistically, I think Lorenzo is more Devontae Smith than Will Fuller. Devontae Smith could beat you over top, but he didn't make his living running by you. You know what I mean, Ryan? Like, now again, I'm not saying Lorenzo is Devontae Smith or Will Fuller. I'm just comparing using a well-known type of player to say Devontae Smith, Will Fuller, similar production, right? If you project out Will Fuller two extra games like Devontae had in a different offense, but got to it very differently. And then Will Fuller's not as good as Devontae Smith. You guys understand the point that I'm making here.
Yep.
Lorenzo is more of a Devontae Smith in a route runner, you know, take short plays and turn them long. Occasionally can run by you. But Devontae Smith didn't make his living. Now, the first big play he ever made was a vertical route, right? But he didn't make his living with just running posts and goes all day like Henry Ruggs did. He was a guy knows how to get open. He's working himself free. He's catching the ball at 15, 20 yards and then doing damage, right?
Right.
And that, to me, is more Lorenzo, where Braden Lindsay's that guy that your safeties better be aware of him on every single play. And if they're worried about him, how are they defending Michael Mayer? How are they defending Lorenzo? How are they defending Chris Tyree? How are they defending Buckner out of the backfield? Do you know what I mean? And so that's why I say, even though there's a case where Braden Lindsay could be their third or fourth most productive pass catcher, he could have the biggest game plan impact on the entire roster. And I'll say this too. I think that's especially true in the opener against Ohio State, because who's the one guy that Ohio State's not going to be spending all summer saying, we got to make sure that guy doesn't beat us? It's going to be Braden Lindsay.
Yeah,
they're going to be worried about Avery Davis on third down. They're going to be worried about Mayer. They're going to be worried about Lorenzo because of what they've proven. The one guy that they're not going to like, hey, let's have a game plan for number zero. That'll be his chance to say, okay, single cover me. All right, cool. Mm-hmm. Put Cameron Brown on me one-on-one, please. You know, and I think that's where you could see even early on, he could have that impact.
Potential first round pick, Cameron Brown. Is that who you're talking about? So I had to throw that in there.
Yeah, man. You did. Fire me up today.
You know, someone just reminded me in the chat there, Brian. You know, there's another team that's an interesting team to maybe be in the top 10, at least close, mm-hmm. is South Carolina. With they had Austin Stogner transfer in from Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. They have Jaheim Bell at tight end last year, who's a really talented player coming mm-hmm. back. They had Josh Van at wide receiver, who's a good football player as well. Yeah. So just another team to think about.
Stogner fill the shoes of your boy Nick Muse? I don't know.
I love Nick Muse, man. I have a soft spot for Nick Muse. He was such a solid player.
My thing is, I just don't know who their second receiver is going to be.
That's fair.
But I'll say this. They're going to have – you look at, like, Josh Van, for example. I didn't know he was coming back. He was a senior last year. Man, that COVID thing is a beautiful thing.
Yes, it is.
Josh Van's a nice player. I like him. But the thing that hurt him last year is, I mean, they were a hot mess at quarterback, man. And sure were. Spencer Rattler is – like, he's walking in such a different dynamic. Before it was like, hey, are you the next Kyler Murray? Are you the next, you know, Baker Mayfield? And now it's like, please be better than Luke Doty. Please be better than Jason Brown. Please be better than the guy that we brought in because we were going to have him be a coach and had to turn him into a player.
Oh, you know, man. You mean the assistant coach turned quarterback who lost his starting job at North Dakota State? That guy?
Exactly.
Oh,
that guy started games for South Carolina.
Zeb Noland, man. What a legend.
He's walking into such a different dynamic now. And here's the funny thing. He was their best quarterback last year. That's the even sadder part. Yeah. I mean, look, 7 touchdowns, 1 interception, 7.3 yards per attempt, better than all the other quarterbacks they had. So now Spencer Rattler doesn't have to be that Heisman Trophy winner, number one quarterback to help his team win. He just needs to be. Just be yourself. Just make the plays that can get you there. Just run the offense. When you get a chance to make a play, make a play. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be the key. And so now here's the thing I will add to this about Michigan. And I made the comment earlier about Michigan. The one thing that could change this a little bit is if J.J. McCarthy is able to get healthy and win the starting quarterback job. Because I think if you can add a dynamic athlete at quarterback, and I think J.J. McCarthy is not Tyler Buckner as an athlete. He's got a big arm and he is athletic. If mm-hmm. you can add that element to the quarterback position, it's going to help their playmakers because they don't have to be dudes per se. Because mm-hmm. now you have a quarterback that can actually raise your level of play up. So part of my I'm not sure I'm buying Michigan at six thing comes from the thought of Cade McNamara still being the starting quarterback. But even still, I still believe Notre Dame has more potential than Michigan does simply because Michigan has got way more proven production. But if everybody plays to their potential, there's nobody at Michigan that I'm trading for Lorenzo Styles. There's nobody at Michigan that I'm trading for Michael Mayer. Nobody. There's nobody in Michigan that I'm trading for Tobias Merriweather, with all due respect to their young receivers. So and I would make the case for Deion Colsey as well. So the God-given talent in Notre Dame is better, but the difference is Michigan's got a lot of dudes that have caught passes and in big moments, and I think that's the difference for me. So those are some of the caveats. But I do think I would say probably more comfortably in the bottom five, everything would have to go right for Notre Dame to get in the top five for me. You know, but the potential's there. It's just I'm more confident that some of the other groups are going to get into it as than maybe I am at that position, just because there's so much to prove,
You know, it's a weird team that's in the top that I just noticed. I didn't even notice Oklahoma at number eight. Yeah. Do they have anything coming back besides Marvin Mims? I mean, Stogner transferred, right? Mario Williams transferred. Yeah. Do they have Mike Woods went into the draft last year? Do they have anything? Jadon
Hazelwood didn't do a whole lot for them last year.
Right.
They did get some grad transfers. Let me look at that. They did get some guys to transfer in. Let me look at who that is. And it, like they also lost, they had a really good freshman receiving corps projected to show up. And then they like Luther Burden flipped to Missouri and they lost some of those guys. Let me see who they got. I thought they had a couple like grad transfers coming in.
I know they got Dylan Gabriel, the quarterback from UCF, right? I kind of like Gabriel a little bit as far as the college quarterback goes. But.
They got the kid with the best quarterback name in the country.
General Booty.
Yeah, there you go. They did get Javion Hester from Missouri. He transferred in. Let's see here. He had J.J. Hester. He had 12 catches for 225 yards. He's a big play guy. Big play guy. L.V. Bunkley Shelton from Arizona State transferred in.
Okay.
I thought the other receiver was better to me, in my opinion. Pearsall was a better player. But, you know, he played last year, played 12 games, had 33 catches, 418 yards. He transferred in.
Where did Pearsall end up? He was actually a decent player for Arizona State. He's not a bad little player.
That's a good question. I honestly do not know. Gotcha. I honestly do not know. I'd have to go look. Did he make a decision?
I thought he did. I thought he did transfer somewhere. Okay. I could be wrong, though. Was it Ricky, right? Ricky Pearsall? Yeah. He's a good player.
Let's see where he ended up.
He supposedly runs in like the – Florida? Okay. Florida. He supposedly runs in like the high 4.3s, apparently, someone told me. So
yeah, we'll see. So I mean they had some decent players transfer in, but I'm not buying the top 10 thing. I think there's some other groups that should be in there.
I do like Marvin Mims, but you know.